For August the 7th, 2020, we talk about Grounded, the upcoming Sekiro patch, and we ask you about your favorite missable content in games. Welcome to Level 339. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. I'm trying to think of anything pressing here at the start that we want to headline with, but I don't know if there is.
I'll jump in. I just want to say it's nice that, you know, from like 4 months ago, things are not as like precarious of like what's going to happen a week from now.
Yeah.
Like things aren't great right now in the US, but they're not like, you know, the world going to end in 2 weeks? You
know? Wait, but only because it's like now I'm pretty certain the world's going to end.
Yeah. No, it's really weird how we just kind of settled into a rut, and yeah, I wish that I had your sense of security and well-being, Ben.
Well, now I feel bad.
No, you shouldn't feel bad.
Feel like honestly, I'm not trying to be snarky. Like, in what way? Because like I thought most of the like metrics were actually getting worse. Is that not the case?
No, I think we're over the hump in terms of new active cases in the U.S. Or at least it's not increasing day over day. It's going slightly down. I'll throw something in the chat.
Yeah. I mean, things are without a doubt like better here, I know. Mm-hmm. Just didn't realize that extended to the rest of the...
Now we can put the focus back on the protests.
Yes. Yeah.
But since we're going there, it is amazing to me. You know, I'm in a lot of parent circles, talking to a lot of people, and the number of parents that are very casually like, "Yeah, well, schools will open. It'll be like a month, and then everything's going to get real, and we'll shut down, and then we'll take it seriously." Just like blase, like that's a foregone conclusion that's going to happen. Is terrifying. Like with the schools that we were at, I'm very fortunate to be in a system that offers or is going to offer online classes. And Jen and I were like, no brainer. Duh. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
They were expecting like a 60-40 split. They got a 90-10 split in terms of 90% of people are sending their kids back into schools.
Wait, what?
Right.
I mean,
what?
I mean, isn't that just an economic reality? Like they would have to send, you know, they would have to send their kids back in order to go back to work. Right.
That's
the majority of people.
True.
Yeah.
The question is like, can you keep your kids at home is what that's asking, you know?
Yeah.
Which if that's, I mean, that's just as damning if that is the case. Then
there are multiple systems that are completely failed. Yeah.
Yeah. but then I had another, I've spent a lot of time in Tabletop Simulator with random strangers, over the past couple of days. We'll get to that. But one of them was a Scotsman.
Okay.
And first off, the accent was just clutch, and I enjoyed myself the entire time for that reason alone. But then at the end of the time, we were just kind of hanging out and chatting, me, him, and a couple others, and the topic came to how America is handling things, and just the lack, I mean, the justified lack of comprehension from the rest of the world. At least, you know, this one person's perspective was like, we knew you guys were a little bit crazy, but like. There were no words.
Yeah.
I am confounded. It was really funny because it's like, I don't know how often he, hangs out with Americans, but you could tell this was just like his one opportunity to be like, I have so many questions for how you guys are not all dead.
Yeah.
Like what worldview could possibly justify this? Unfortunately, the room, you know, I was in was all like, no, we're right there with you.
It's baffling.
Not like, anyone here, but yeah. It's as baffling to us as it is to you.
This is not how we would have handled it. No.
Yeah. No, I would love to, if we were going to have a crisis like this, I would love to have had it literally any other, under any other leadership, but
yeah. Or any leadership. That'd be cool too.
Or just no leadership.
I mean, I don't know. But
anyway, those are my two my Corona thoughts.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I just I'm kind of we're winding down. We're nearing the end, and that's fine. That's
I hope so.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about the end of Corona. I'm just the end broadly. It's fine.
I was about to say, I like to think that there's going to be someone in the future that their primary reference for what coronavirus was like or what the pandemic was like is listening to our show and hearing our banter at the beginning of each episode.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's why I broadcast this out into space. So so they can send a meteor to us. yeah. I really don't have anything going on. Like, we just got flooded out here in mid-Ohio. So I've been dealing with that. My house is fine, but like my brother's house got all flooded and stuff. It's been real rough. You know, like just actual like weather wise, but that's kind of taken up most of everything. How about you, David? What's up?
Not too much. sorry. No, I
almost hear the effort going into not putting out something that will be regretted.
Yeah.
Yeah. The secret police haven't been dispatched to New York yet.
I mean,
Twitter.
Yeah, I know they kind of have. they picked up an unhoused trans woman over the weekend, straight up rolled up with a minivan and loaded her in, and took her off. Now that was not like a federal, like that wasn't DHS. That was just NYPD. And like they told us that like that was supposed to make us any more comfortable.
I never thought minivans would be like a symbol of fear.
Yeah
but wow.
Clearly no, you don't have kids.
Yeah. But it's just like it was just like literally just a tan minivan, like a tan town and country, just rolled up and you know, some goons came in and loaded her in and you know, pulled away and said that they were doing it because she was putting stickers on cameras, which is absolutely something that is worth being disappeared over. I don't believe that. I'm being sarcastic.
That sounds like a public service.
Yep. No, she's a hero. I feel comfortable saying that, but
ugh. Yeah, I was, sorry, this is to a certain degree. This is like me venting. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of shocked about the statements about like Trump protecting suburbia.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think that honestly has to be, that's maybe the line from which it's like, I'm not sure how you could possibly hear this. That and like think that was okay. Like,
yeah,
that's not, there's not even any like I'm going to do the whole like I'm not touching you thing.
No, it's just straight up saying the quiet part loud. You know, it's not a dog whistle, it's a bullhorn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? What's going on with you?
Well, I was feeling good.
Sorry.
Reach for the good. I had friends in town over the weekend. That was enjoyable. We got to go outside and sit at a park and have a tiny picnic. And that was a little bubble of happiness from the current state of affairs.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was. And since, you know, it was Brian Perk and it was his birthday. So that was fun.
Oh, cool.
And outside of that, not too much. That was that's the biggest like social interaction, because we also hung out with another couple friend that we have and another friend. So it's six of us all together.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest group I've been in since March. So we'll see. I'll try and be like a little bit more safe the next 2 weeks. So.
I mean,
we'll see.
You know, you were hanging out outside. Like that's a huge determiner. You know.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
But we were all spitting in the picnic baskets together because that's kind of our ritual. So
yeah. No. It goes back. You know. God, what are you gonna? They're gonna make you give up everything?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. How are you, Dennis?
I'm doing good. Luke's birthday was this past week.
Mm-hmm.
My six-year-old, my now six-year-old.
Wow.
And he got a giant Marble Works set.
Okay.
I don't know the last time y'all played with Marble Works, but I had forgotten how much fun that is.
I don't know that I've ever.
What is this?
Oh, Marble Works?
Okay. I'm looking. I recognize this.
Yeah, Rolly Marbles.
Yeah, it's like a track. Yeah, like little modular things for making marble, like Marble Run tracks.
Maybe it's more ubiquitous than it was.
Yeah.
We're talking like the video game where you're the marble and you have to like break down the thing.
No, that is Marble Madness. I never had these as a kid, but I've seen them in stores. Like when I lived in Oakley, I would go to King Arthur's Toys and just like mess around with these. Yeah.
Oh, it's a blast. So you know the joy.
Oh yeah.
And in ours, like it's Magnetile's version of it. So it's all like more loosey goosey. Like it's not as rigid and you can play around with it a little more. And just like, you know, so first we're building it and the marble pops out by accident. And they're like, wait, maybe we can make them jump the track. And then it's like, maybe we can make them jump the track, bounce off something and land back on the track. and then, you know, we've just completely taken over the kitchen. So, yeah.
So they went with the Star Road approach.
Yeah. we have a Marble Works Rainbow Road going on in our kitchen right now. And I love it.
Yeah.
And awesome. I'm not going to lie. Jen took the kids up to bed and I spent another like 5 to 10 minutes just playing.
Yeah.
It was delightful.
Also, I appreciate that you were able to translate what I was talking about.
The Star Road is also a thing in Mario, so that's fine.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's in Mario World. It's the challenge courses. You're good.
At this point, there have been so many Marios that any two words plus Mario has probably existed in canon at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. No, marble works or marble run kind of things, like that speaks to I can just remember being a little kid and being fascinated by Rube Goldberg machines, which was like, you know, I mean obviously they're fascinating, but like, you know, the breakfast machine in Pee-wee's Big Adventure or the Rube Goldberg machine in the opening of McGee and Me, the children's Christian television show.
That, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, we're gonna borrow some McGee and Me tapes from the church, Cole. When you're over at Grandma's, you can watch your show about the best cartoon friend a boy could ever have. And I mostly was just there for the Rube Goldberg machine at the start. So yeah, this is very cool. I can imagine that being a lot of fun for a kid that age.
This is completely tangent. For some reason, did you ever watch VeggieTales as a kid?
Not as a kid. I was aware of it. But
I watched a lot, mostly because I had younger siblings. I was like, you know, right at the end of that phase.
Yeah. Sure. So like, Christian, you know, for people who weren't in kind of that culture, Christian, I guess, kids entertainment where all the characters are inexplicably vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who voiced, was it Bob the Tomato? has been recently doing some like really, really on point explanations of like Black Lives Matter.
Oh, cool.
Which got me thinking about just that whole thing. But like, I was thinking about McGee and Me, I'm like, part of me feels very comforted, like looking back on that and realizing like, at least I don't feel like that's not like an element of that culture that I now feel like, wow, that's kind of creepily like bigoted or like you know what I mean, like it wasn't, you know, I don't recall it at least being super culture war-y.
Like all of the episodes that I remember, like the lesson at the end was like, take responsibility for your actions, think of
right,
other people.
Exactly. Like, I'm like, yeah. I'm kind of glad that there was at least some of that stuff that was just like, all right,
makes
the cut.
Yeah, although the little boy from McGee and Me did go on to be a grand dragon of the KKK. So,
oh, that's
whoops. Okay.
No, he didn't. No,
okay.
Oh, damn it.
I'm not sure
why I'm saying damn it.
That like I'm like, oh, that
much better as a joke.
Yeah. No, I just like the idea of canceling this child star. Oh, jeez.
No, so back on the marble stuff, my only like, I don't know, equivalent for that is the high school we went to, our talented enrichment program or whatever it was called. Like one of the events at the end of the year is we basically had one day where the teacher had just over the course of the year collected up a massive amount of like toilet paper rolls or tubes and like wrapping paper tubes and stuff like that, and would just turn like the entirety of her classroom into like a giant marble course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. She didn't like me, and I remember her criticizing my portion of the course because it was not really chutes, it was tubes. I didn't have enough open runs. Yeah. Sue didn't care for me. But that was a fun time. Yeah. How do you guys feel about going on and doing the show?
Let us.
I was going to try and stretch this banter a little bit longer. I think we can make a full show of it. Yeah.
No, I think I've got games to talk about, you guys. So, you know, I think that we can do the regular kind of show with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and we can get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so.
Cole.
Yes.
The fact that you say you have games that you've been playing means that you have not been playing solely Death Stranding.
This is true. I'm waiting for my I'm waiting for my new television to arrive. I'm currently coming up on week 4 waiting for that bad boy.
Oh wow.
So, yeah. Pretty upset about that cuz I want to play that pretty game on a good screen. Mm-hmm. So I've been waiting for that. Yeah. But I was here last time. Usually I throw to the person who was not here last time. So I'm going to say, hey, David, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Sorry, it's time is, you know, is irrelevant now. So sometimes I have to think like, what was I playing, you know, several years ago when I was last on this show?
Yeah.
So a couple of new things, actually. I picked up a game on Game Pass called Grounded. Which is basically however close you can get to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids without getting sued.
Okay.
I think I've seen this.
Yeah, so it's honey, a four...
Honey, I minimize the dependence.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wait, are you asking for a divorce?
I'm sorry you had to find out this way, Dennis.
So it's a four-player survival game.
Okay.
So in that respect, seems like it's a little bit mashing up like a Left 4 Dead with a is it Rust or
like Astroneer kind of had that vibe too a little bit.
Right. And so you play as one of several kids that are shrunk to approximately the size of an ant and find themselves in your front yard. And so you have to, craft materials from like, you know, pieces of sticks and acorns and ants that you kill and things like that in order to make equipment to survive and build bases and things like that. And then also I haven't gotten very far, but there's some sort of weird electronic machine that presumably is responsible for shrinking you and then will unshrink you that you're trying to figure out how to fix.
It's cool. It's cool that the ant's eyes glow red when you get down to that scale.
You know, as you do. Most people don't know that all ants are actually tiny demonic creatures. So,
I mean, if you've ever had an ant infestation, it's probably believable.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. As you might imagine, the interesting part of the experience for me is that the primary enemy in the game is spiders.
Ooh, okay. So how are you coping with that?
Well, so I've tried it on the like just basic settings, and that's not too horrible because they are somewhat cartoony, okay. but still a little bit more than what I want to deal with. Luckily, they have a extensive arachnophobia mode.
Oh, that's you good.
Basically, you have a slider that goes from 1 to, I don't know, like 8 or something.
All right. For each leg of the spider.
not quite that much, but kind of. So it goes from like, as you do it, it's, I'm not sure the first level, I think actually might be just like, instead of sort of moving like a spider, sort of like perched up on its legs and skittering around, it does kind of a more cartoony movement. I'm not sure about if that's actually the case. I can't quite tell. Mm-hmm. But then, like, some of them are like, all right, well, are you not bothered if it's still basically a spider but doesn't have 8 legs, has, like, 4 legs? Or what if it's still a spider but, like, you know, doesn't have mandibles? Or what if it, you know, only has 2 eyes and yeah. then gets all the way up to, like, the max setting is it's basically, like, a... I don't know, like a, is a torus the like a football shaped shape?
A football would be an oblate spheroid.
Okay, so it is a oblate spheroid body and a similar spheroid head just like floating around. So that's the max thing. So I kind of like that approach of like, I don't know, I feel like I imagine the video game like, being like Freud, you're, tell me what part of the spider you find disturbing.
You made it sound like a negotiation, which is very fun.
Yeah. So,
I just want to know what they're doing for people that have a phobia of oblate spheroids.
You know, that's, that is well, a mean, it's, legit it, question.
It's this, I mean, it's all the same settings, just reversed.
For all our oblospherophobes.
So it's also something else I've noticed that's kind of interesting is... Sorry.
There's an image online of just the alpha being 0 of the spider, so you just see the transparent background of the game.
Oh, no.
So the other thing that's kind of fun is the... insects appear to have at least some sort of basic like predator and prey relationship. So like the ladybugs will hunt down aphids and ants will generally speaking like don't like it if something's causing trouble. So mm-hmm. will you know won't go after a spider, but like if a spider's kind of being around being a nuisance, will like start going after it. You know, things like that. Also the ants, it's adorable because when they find you, they're not hostile and so they just kind of come up and sort of do whatever the ant equivalent of like sniff at you is. So I'm really hoping like my dream for the end game of this is I just like befriend the ants and lead them on a crusade against the spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like the way to go.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that like they make that be, I don't know if they eventually implement like an ant tech tree or something, but like basically I want to max out my ranks in ant friend.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so that's pretty good. I haven't played a ton of it, but you know, seems pretty solid. The other thing I picked up is Ghost of Name I can't pronounce.
Ghost of Tsushima?
Yes. Which is pretty cool.
How far did you get?
Let's have see, you gotten to the title screen?
Yeah, I have gotten to the title screen. I just completed the mission that gives you the assassination ability.
Okay.
Which is after the tutorial, that's either the first or second mission, depending on which one you decide to do first. So yeah. I beat that.
What did you think of the start? Did my criticism hold true? Did you feel it was like clunky, a clunky Uncharted? or were you okay with it?
So in what respect? Like, I don't recall like much platforming type thing.
Yeah.
But do you mean more in terms of like the like exposition and kind of that sort of thing?
Just like small things, like when you go prone to crawl under something, the way they do the camera change, like, doesn't feel very fluid, how it switches to like first person mode instead of staying third person mode, or like,
yeah,
the stealth systems like seems very clunky, where it's like, you can jump up over a fence and someone will slightly see you, then immediately goes away. Or like, you can walk up right next to somebody and they won't see you at all. You know, like,
No, definitely it does have some very weird, some very, very weird things with that. No, I think that's, definitely on point. It also, I think, Even with some of the, especially early on storyline, like, I feel like the very first mission, you know, has some very good elements in terms of just like very clearly being about like, we're gonna go full on like samurai war scene type of thing, and, you know, does really good like hitting the dramatic points with that. However, the actual gameplay parts of it are very much like, hey, this is the tutorial. Are you being tutorialized?
Yeah. Are you talking about like the sword fight with your uncle?
Yeah, yeah. And like, overall, I guess I'd say overall the story elements of it are very strong. Sometimes the game elements that go with it are kind of transparent. So like the overall beat of like the thief lady basically teaching you how to be a thief is like, you know, really good story beats, you know, really entertaining, you know, that sort of thing. You know, has some fun interplay where she'll like have you sneak into a place and then you'll just like walk out in front of the people and be like,
I challenge you.
You know, so like from a storyline point is very, very good. However, the gameplay elements are very then explicitly like that happens. And then it's like, now we are doing the challenge tutorial. Dude,
the standoff mechanic is such a good mechanic in that game.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know if I properly explained this before or not, but basically anytime you see a group of people and you haven't like engaged them yet, you can press up on the D-pad and you do what we were just saying. You yell at the person from afar and hold out your sword. And then it has this like almost like cutscene where it like shows like a showdown. And it's like this mini game where they like have their sword and they're like, you know, like acting like they're going to attack you. And you have to wait for them to commit and try and swing at you. And you press triangle to like quick draw your sword and slash them with one cut. And then it can get upgraded where then other people will charge you and you press another single button to kill them like with one shot. So it's like a way to just insta-kill like three people of the group of people that you're attacking.
Yeah. The other thing I like, I haven't unlocked this yet, but there's some kind of somewhat similar mechanics in Shadow of War that I really like, but you can also eventually like, you know, you can only ever kill like straight up with that up to three people. However, the more you upgrade it, the more likely then like bystanders will like, oh, you'll like freak out and start like backpedaling and trip. And you can just like walk over and like secure them. And so like it does a really good job of like, yeah, it would be kind of overpowered if it just let you just like cut through everyone just like, you know, ninja style. However, it's still like, but we're still going to kind of let you do that, you know?
We need to let you feel like that's what's happening.
Right, exactly. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff with that. And like I said, I think it really does a good job of nailing just some of the feeling of like it being partway between being like really, really cool and heroic and really, really stupid.
Which one do you think? What are you thinking of with that?
Well, just in general, like, I feel like just like the body, me- language and stuff like that, like, it's somewhat in between, like, oh, this is a, you know, this is, like, believable, like, someone being a badass samurai, and, but also kind of, depending on the situation, is kind of, like I said, just literally, like, you show up out of nowhere and start screaming at people.
they definitely do a good job of, like, going the fun direction with whatever it is, right. But still exactly. Maintaining respect for the source material.
Right. The other element actually I like with that I think's kind of a fun sort of subtle story point is like even that element, like a lot of the story is kind of him figuring out like at the very start of the game, he's just straight up like kind of the TV tropes, you know, lawful, stupid.
Right.
Type of thing. And then kind of, it seems like a lot of the character development is, you know, him becoming progressively more like there's a place for being cunning.
Yeah.
And even that like tutorial that's kind of making fun of that, it is very explicit. He's like, that this is kind of him being getting a little bit savvy of like, yeah, I'm going to go up and charge them, but I'm going to cut them first, you know, type of thing. So like, I do like even that story element is like just a little bit of character progression.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Other than that, I really like that just, so in this kind of reminds me in some ways of like Warframe. One of the things I really like about it is every single thing you do in Warframe is, you know, adjusted to be towards the ends of like, how can we make this support this, you know, space ninja, you know, fantasy type thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just like
as it should be.
Right, exactly. So just like, you know, the fact that like all of your like body mechanics, like, you know, you don't have a sit emote, you have like a kneel emote type mm-hmm. of thing.
Yep.
And I feel like Ghosts of
Tsushima.
Tsushima. Yes. Sorry. Has kind of a similar thing in that like all of the mechanics directly support like evoking elements of kind of the samurai mm-hmm. movies. And so, for example, you know, all of the upgrades are like you writing haiku or you, you know, relaxing in hot springs or, you know, doing test cutting against bamboo, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I want to bring that up. I wrote my first haiku this last week. It's just like a small random event you can find. The way it's a mini game in the sense where you look around at like this very cinematic view and you like pick a spot and that'll be like the line that you write, like a wind blowing through trees or
mm-hmm.
like a waterfall, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of it, you get some sort of item and then the flavor text for the item is the haiku you wrote.
Oh.
It's like, oh. Nice. Yeah, it's just like, that's just lovely. Like, that's so, it's nice.
Is the what? Item that you get informed by the choices that you made with the haiku?
I don't know about that.
Because that'd be cool.
Oh my god, the idea of min-maxing a haiku is just delightful to me.
Of course, that's always a thing, but I, you know, there's a possibility that somebody will min-max the haiku. I think that when I heard about the haiku being present, I thought, yeah, that's kind of dorky. Actually, like, cool, but it would be neater if they had that play into the mechanics, like if they could integrate that. So I would accept the risk of somebody min-maxing a haiku if it meant mm-hmm. that I could, you know, if it meant that doing this impacted the play.
I'm gonna counter and say that like all of these things are, as David is mentioning, are like adding to the immersion in the environment, and it's okay. Just like, for me, like, I don't care if it has an impact, if the item like has a impact or if it's just purely mm-hmm. cosmetic. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like it just makes you feel more a part of the world, and it's just really pleasant.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that. One of the most pleasant surprises. I haven't seen a ton of this so far. Like, I think all the only ones I've actually done so far have been one of the hot springs and one of the Inaru's shrines, which those are basically like Shinto fox goddess. So you have to, like, you'll see just like a random fox out, like, being a fox in the world, and you have to just like follow it. And it will, like, at least the one I went through like a basic jumping puzzle to get to it. But the one that I really thought was cool is the hot springs. When you get in, it gives you like two options. So, like, in this case, it was like, reminisce about your father who basically died when you were a kid, or like, reminisce about your uncle who's the person you're trying to save. And like, whichever you do, he'll then like do a short monologue about, like, you know, his thoughts, kind of his regrets on those things, you know, that sort of thing. So it, you know, still pulls in kind of some story character beats.
It sounds very much like this is a game that is not afraid to just luxuriate in all the different pieces of this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
it's,
definitely.
It's funny. I think with Ghost of Tsushima coming out, it felt, I it wasn't in my mind as like a mega launch, but the way I've seen it handled, feels like it's gotten the mega launch reaction where everyone hates it off the bat just because that's the safe play. And you know, you don't want to be the one sucker that actually comes out liking it when everyone else is panning it. But if you hate it initially, you do have the option of, like, you know, I think I'm coming around, and that looks cool.
That can be part of the forelash to the backlash.
Yeah. And then, but everyone I've heard who's actually played it, which, not to say the people online haven't, but you know, all the personal stories I've heard about it from Ben, now David, and other people have been delightful.
It, like, once you get into it, it's like one of the better versions of like an open world, like Far Cry game. And the reason why is because of all these small details that they commit to, like the theming. Like, yeah, it just makes the world so much more alive, and it doesn't feel like the game that it actually is when you look at the bare bones of like the mechanics or whatever. But it feels a lot more than that.
The discourse around anything is going to be a nightmare because that's discourse, baby. But I think that Ghost of Tsushima definitely attracted a certain kind or character of ire, simply because it's like really the last major first party console exclusive game, you know, for this generation, and that is going to be you know, I mean, it's going to put it in a place where people are going to, like, you know, you're kind of evaluating the PS4 to a certain degree as well.
What taste is going to be left in your mouth?
So another thing I kind of like about it is your enemies in the game are the Mongols that are invading, and I've no idea from like a historical standpoint at all, like, you know, how realistic the depiction is or anything like that. But I do like that one, like, Mongol invasion of Japan is not, I don't think, ever like a scenario I've seen in a game before.
I only ever learned about the Mongols invading Japan in the context of this game. I had, you know, obviously, you know, China and like Eastern Europe, but never heard of them doing that.
Yeah. Have you guys not watched the YouTube video, The History of Japan?
You know what? I have seen that, but it bounced off of me.
That's how I know the ending of this game, unfortunately.
But yeah, and it's kind of funny. Like, I'm not sure I've actually can think of any other instances of like the Mongols even showing up in another game, which is kind of funny considering they conquered the known world.
They always factor in like grand strategy games as well. Like,
That's a good point. A good point. The other one you could technically argue is, I guess, the Khan shows up in like the Fallen London series, although it's much more explicitly meant to be like a, oh, like a Victorian era, like
idea of what the con was.
Yeah. Like orientalist type of thing, like kind of semi satire of that, as opposed to actually being like depicting any specific people group.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. The other thing I'm learning from this game, though, is that I do not understand how Japanese pronunciation works.
Oh, yeah?
You get the option to name your horse early on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a black horse named, I think it's Kage, which is Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fairly certain that's how it's at least somehow pronounced, because that is literally like every other word in Naruto. however, when my character pronounces it, I am 90% sure he keeps saying Kanye. and so, like, I don't know if it's a thing where it's like, oh, like, the words pronounced differently, like when it's used in a sentence versus just on its own, or if it's like, oh, you know, this character is from, you know, this island and like has an accent, or, you know, regional accent, or if it's just like, I don't know, I can't.
I mean, it could be
bad at Japanese.
It could be that actor's delivery. So I'm not an expert on this. Take this with a grain of salt. But just from learning how to speak about video games, which often have Japanese names put into them, my understanding is, you know, pronunciations don't necessarily differ based on context like that. It's kind of always going to be the same. I'm speaking specifically of like when Japanese words are Romanized, you know, like written out in our alphabet. Additionally, every letter is pronounced in a word as well. And most of the, and most of the sounds, if not all of them, always have, are basically are always the same. You know, so there's never a time where like a G would be, you know, Kage, or it would be like a, you know, Kage, you know, like it is always Kage.
Yeah. So I have no idea what's going on. Like, what is the issue with that? But it's just kind of funny to me. That's about the, literally the only, I think, word I've been able to pick up. And to be fair, like I studied a little bit of Chinese in college. Mm-hmm. I've studied no Japanese. It's literally just like whatever I've picked up
from media,
from watching anime. So it's not surprising that I haven't been able to pick up any other word. I'm more just saying it's been kind of funny because that's the only word someone's used that I recognize, and like I cannot figure out the
pronunciation. It might literally just be that actor's delivery.
It very well could be.
Yeah. Like if you switch it over to like Japanese VO.
Which is what I'm doing.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
And as a side note, something I really like is like that is explicitly one of the settings. Like the default settings are like English or Samurai Cinema, which is basically, you know, Japanese voiceover with English subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the fact that like, from the outset, they're like, yeah, this is probably what a lot of people are going to do.
Yeah, might as well.
It's much better.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, so this game sounds pretty fun.
I've really been enjoying it.
One point I want to add, because this is an example that I've thought of like all the while playing the game, is like there's parts where you're riding on a horse through like a bamboo forest. And like I was like, oh, I wonder what happens if you kind of like veer into a tree or whatever. You just go through it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. I'm still having a good time. And then I think of like Red Dead Redemption, where you like hit the tree, fall off, get to rebandage yourself, get on the horse. I'm just like, man, this is such a better game than that. Like,
oh, jeez. I mean, so it makes sense to go to you next, Ben. Did you have anything else to say about Ghost of Tsushima? How much have you been playing more of it?
I have. I think from the outset, they show you like how many kind of areas there are. I don't know if they expand past that or not. But mm-hmm. from the beginning of the game, there's like three mega areas. I've gotten to the point where I've opened up the second one, but I'm staying at the first one and I'm trying to like finish everything there before I move on. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. So it's just kind of playing around with the game. That's where I found like the haiku stuff. Yeah, I think I'm probably like maybe halfway to two thirds of the way through the first area. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's pretty fun. It's definitely a nice game that you can go to and like sit down for like 30, 45 minutes or whatever and do like whatever region you want to do. And then you can do something else if you want. But mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
random question. The setting of this game, this is like explicitly set pre like introduction of gunpowder to Japan, right?
Yeah, I believe so. The Mongolians invaded twice, I think.
I think this is in the 1200s.
And if
just because I know, like, from like Neo, you know, like everything is like, you know, most of the ranged weapons are like flintlocks and stuff. And I don't think there's any of that in this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, I think what was that the Sengoku era was when they had I don't know what I'm saying. It would have been a couple hundred years after this that gunpowder would have been introduced, if I recall correctly. I am uncertain of that.
Sure.
Huh. Yeah. Have you been playing anything else, Ben?
Not really. I've been playing Slay the Spire, and I got two levels advanced on the Ascension mode for one of the characters. So I think I'm like at 16 maybe for that out of 20. Mm-hmm. That's like another game that's really good to just keep going back to. So I don't know. I don't have any new games, so I won't talk about any of the stuff I always play.
Have you tried Monster Train yet?
I haven't, but the streamer that I watch who does Slay the Spire also plays that game. So I guess I should have thought through on that one.
Nice. Who's the streamer, by the way? I'm trying to find new people to watch.
Jorbs.
Okay.
Like Coach Z?
I don't know.
So just the way the character Coach Z in Homestar Runner says job is Jorb.
I'm having a bit of blue car syndrome here because my personal Homestar Runner incidence is very high for this episode. it didn't quite come out in reference, but when you guys were talking about the challenge mechanic in Ghost of Tsushima, I went and found the 20x6. Pardon me, I might be wrong, but are you looking for a challenge? Yeah.
Oh god, that fun little Mega Man clone they made for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just so we are clear on this, I was both wrong and right about when gunpowder came. So gunpowder came from the Chinese in the 13th century, but it was the Portuguese who brought what we consider to be like our kind of firearms in the mid 1500s. So I could have, just looked that up instead of firing off my mouth.
So yeah. David, have you played Monster Train?
I have not. I've watched a pretty excessive, that is now my, like, I went to watch something on YouTube, but we live in a dystopia and I don't want to think. Is like watching just people play Monster Train.
I might have to go that route. Let me talk about one other tiny game too. Is I tried buying and playing 5D Chess and immediately noped out of that game.
Oh no! Is it as bad as the name suggests? I haven't heard anything about this.
Oh no, it's worse because the name is actually 5D Chess with time travel.
I really like the idea of the game, but they do not tutorialize it at all. So I had like, it was very hard to figure out what to do, like the first few levels. I think that's like, actually it's like they have like a versus mode on it, but then there's also like a puzzle mode. And I was trying to go through the puzzle mode of it, but it was quite difficult.
So talk me through just the basics of this. Cause I can imagine from the name, but it takes me back to, in UC, there was, I'm going to forget his name now. Yeah. A kid I met, or I wouldn't think of him as a kid at the time, you know, a fellow collegiate person that I met, when I went, and came into the room that he was in, he was, staring away towards a wall from four different chessboards where people were simultaneously playing him, and he was doing everything from memory, playing four games at once.
Was this Gyra?
No.
No.
All right.
I will remember at a later point. But yeah, and not only was he that good, but he was also very personable and explaining like, oh yeah, well, you know, this was really good when you did that, talking through games after the fact. And he's like, I wouldn't have pushed the middle this hard here. That's where I kind of got, and he won all four games, of course. I wouldn't push the middle this hard. That's where you went wrong. I kind of got to then do this, and that's how I won.
Yeah.
But was like just like super cool and nonchalant about it. I think he's in nuclear physics now, so mm-hmm. you know, yeah, all that stuff.
That's what I want. Handling nuclear stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel good with the way that shook out.
He was playing 4D wall stare chess. What is 5D chess?
So the premise of 5D chess is that in addition to your normal movements that you can do, you can move like backwards in time, or you can move across to other dimensions that have happened. So like this is going to be really, really hard to describe on audio and not being able to see any visuals of it. So let's just think of a simple one where it's like two kings and a rook or something like that, and that's all on the board. Like instead of like, say you're a white king and then there's like a black king and a black rook or whatever, and he's about to checkmate you. Instead of like moving somewhere on that board where you're about to die, you can just move back in time to the board state like two moves ago when it was your move again. And so then that board will then have two kings on it. And the current board will now have no kings on it, and just a king and a rook of the other color. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to do these puzzles where it's like you're trying to get checkmate in two. So it's like the premise sounds really, really cool. I just did not understand the game of it. And so like I tried for two puzzles and then just immediately nuked.
I saw like somebody tweet about this. I think the image of it that I saw was like promo art that they were doing, and it was very confusing visually. Looking at this article on chessbase.com, which kind of came up when I searched for 5D chess, where it is laid out like a flowchart, kind of showing the different timelines, that actually makes sense to me.
It looks like a map of the movie Primer, but you're playing chess on it.
Yeah, or like a visual novel, like route, kind of route guide, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the idea of the game then is you need to get a checkmate not just on the current king, but on where the king was last turn, so you take away their option to go back in time.
That's the other thing, is that part I'm not sure of, because I saw one of the puzzles. But I don't know how. I didn't understand how I solved
great.
It. So yeah, I
that's
I
right. You in another dimension understands it.
Yeah, I think the idea is you need to checkmate the king in every dimension after a certain point, maybe something like that. You know,
or checkmate more kings than you have checkmated on you. Like at this point, you know, it seems like you are managing several different outcomes.
It's like a reverse Highlander situation,
maybe. Yeah, this seems like a fun experiment. It desperately does not seem like it is a thing for me.
Yeah, and I think a problem is with chess, like just regular chess, like there's the different number of like options like explodes really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so if you're adding this like dimension on top of it, it's like it's just too much, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you simplified the game down but still made like the 5D, I think it'd be really cool.
So here's one specifically applied to 5D chess. I'm not going to disagree. But the idea of that variability making it harder to follow all possible options can be a really good thing if it pushes the game out of like entirely strategy focused and more into tactics focused. So thinking in terms of like being able to plan out your turns in advance and kind of see the big picture versus like, okay, what do I do with what I have right in front of me?
Yeah, but it's no longer a puzzle game at that point then.
Yeah, but it is hugely what's the word I'm looking for? It's a great way to kind of make people more equal when you're facing off against each other. Mm-hmm. So it's like if this is so complex that we can both only see so many, you know, steps. And it's just, there's no use trying to plan out beyond that creates a little bit more of an equal footing.
But doesn't that also create a much higher ceiling that if somebody gets good at this, like they can be better at it than you possibly ever could?
probably true. And but, I mean, this is an online game, so I assume anytime I face off against anyone in a game like this, they are god tier, and I'm just going to get smacked down.
I want to throw out
that your elo rating or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to throw out another alternative, this, and this, sorry for all these tangents, but there's another form of chess that's kind of popular right now, which is like a four-player chess variant. It was recently released on chess.com, but it's like the board looks like a cross, almost, or like a plus sign, rather. And so basically it's like a weird intersection of 4 8x8 boards that are kind of on top of one another. So I don't know if it's like two sections of 16x8 might be how it is. But the way it works is you take turns in like clockwise order. You have a timer. It's pretty generous where it's like you have like 10 seconds to think about what you want to do. Then the timer starts and like you start losing time. If it ever drops to zero, then like you're done. But the part that's like really crazy is like the politics of it. Like it doesn't really matter if you're like the best chess player there or not. If all three other people team up against you, you're still toast.
You just
can't fight off that many pieces. And so it changes the strategy completely. You want to be really hyper defensive, because if you get checked in four player chess, it's a huge loss. Like, not only is your next move like you have to move your king, but since everyone sees that, everyone else can start taking like free attacks on your pieces.
just keeping you locked.
And this
is like king making the game, though. That's not fun.
I mean, it's pretty upsetting, actually, that not even a game as old as chess is safe from becoming a battle royale.
And so the way it works
is the chessboard gets smaller every couple of minutes.
it's not like that, at least. It's not that sold out yet.
All right, let's start coding that now.
It works on a point system. So like every capture you get a certain number of points. If you capture a king, that's worth like much more points than like capturing a pawn. And then whoever has the most points at the end is the winner of the 4-player game.
Does it end when the first person gets checkmated?
No, it ends. There's weird rules with the ending where it's like somebody who's like in the lead can like end the game at a certain point, but I forget when. But there's kind of there's like these weird mechanics where it's like people can sometimes team up where it's like, oh, this person helped me take out the person who is trying to buy for first place. So I'm going to extend the game and let them capture a bunch of pieces so that they can get more points and that they can be second place and I'll still be first place. Like, there's like some weird political things like that. But
so now it's king making and queen making.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like a nice fun variant that I hadn't seen before, maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
And I played exactly one game of it at a work social last week, and I timed out, so I did not win. But I was playing well before I timed out, so I was happy about that.
That's good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then the other weird wrinkle is your pieces still get promoted when they reach the eighth file or whatever. Whoa. But in this case, it's the middle of the board where that happens. Okay. So you get a bunch of queens in the middle of the board, and it's fun.
Chaos, really. So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I like that.
What I want to see now is simultaneous turn chess, if that doesn't already exist, where like there's no black or white goes first. It's you both say what your next move is, and then it happens. And like if you try to capture a piece that your opponent is also moving that turn, it's going to miss. And so you've got to kind of go for the true forks and then choose the right move.
Wait, what's the what's that strategy game that is exactly that?
Oh, Frozen. There's a bunch of them, but Frozen Synapse, Frozen Cortex, the Frozen series in general.
Yeah, Frozen Synapse was what I was thinking of. Yeah,
I love Frozen Synapse. It's a shame nobody played it.
Yeah,
Frozen Synapse 2 actually looks really good.
Oh, I love it. It's just again, nobody plays it.
Or
the people that play it are god tier. Again, going back to that through line.
There's no
middle. Fair, that was also the problem apparently with the MMO or whatever they made. The one we played some that was the simultaneous strategy game.
Atlas Reactor.
Yeah,
that was good. That was like that was simultaneous League of Legends. Another cool game. But weird enough, Double 11, who did published those, has their name on Minecraft Dungeons, which weird. I don't know how that happened.
Ben, if you're looking for other variants on chess, one of my favorites that I've played because I'm terrible at chess and I have basically no respect for the game because I'm bad at it. So screw it. No, it is a mobile game. It's on iOS and it's on Android. It's called Really Bad Chess. Okay. It is chess, but all of the pieces are randomized. Not like placement, but like, you know, you could just have like, you know, of your 16 pieces, like maybe seven of them could be knights and your enemy just kind of has to put up with that. What's that?
Yeah. So that sounds like a dream.
Yeah. But yeah, it's totally like, how do I strategize? Like when I cannot assume that, you know, I'm dealing with a certain number of bishops, you know, on the screen. You know?
Wait, so does it only reveal what it is when the piece moves? Because that would be fantastic.
No. It just kind of like rolls it and then gives it to you. I also love the tagline for it, a definitely balanced game.
Also, I like that as I'm listening to Dennis, you know, pitch what he wants chess to be, you basically want a roguelike chess
game. Yeah. So did you have anything else, Ben?
No, I have nothing else to... I have no more non-games to talk about. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to do mine here because I have some new stuff. One new thing that I cannot really... I do not want to speak about in detail is the... what is it? Game of the Decade edition of Frog Fractions that came out. I was fortunate enough to play test this. The designer reached out, and I got a chance to kind of sit down with it. So he, you know, set about doing this basically because Flash is dead or dying, you know, like mm-hmm. Flash games just kind of don't exist anymore. And the original Frog Fractions, I think, is too important of a game to, you know, die with it. So, you know, he had put in the effort to port Frog Fractions, I think, to Unity. And so I went in and I played Frog Fractions for the first time in a very long time. And it's still funny. It's still good. It's, you know, all the things that we ever said about Frog Fractions. Subversive, surprising, you know, like there was stuff I forgot was in there.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. So, you know, again, without giving too many details, what I would say is, so the basic version of it is available for free. Like, so anybody who wants to can just go on Steam and download the, you know, download and play Frog Fractions as it was. I would definitely recommend that people who like frogs and hats get the piece of DLC, which is a hat. It is Hop's iconic hat. Hops being the name of the frog from it. It gives you a hat for your frog. It's fun. So I'd recommend people do that. Get a hat for your frog. And that's like, I think that's $8, I think. 8 or 10, something like that. It's worth it because it's a really nice hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful hat.
Yes. And also make sure you look in your options as well, because you can do stuff with the hat that might be pretty surprising. So yeah, Frog Fractions Game of the Decade with the hat DLC. That's a good hat, you guys. Let's see here. I finished Carrion.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah. You know, it's a short game. It's fun. I really think that the thing that keeps me from making it like a full throated endorsement or recommendation is the fact that it is a Metroidvania game without a map. And uh-oh. I can see the position
physically. As in, like, your issue is physically there's no, like, map menu or whatever?
Right. There's no map menu that you can look at and see, like, oh, I haven't explored all of this over here. Or there's a, you know, there's a door here that, you know, or a pickup that I wasn't able to get. That kind of map is very important in a game that has an awful lot of backtracking to it. Especially when you are unlocking new abilities. Like throughout the game, you're unlocking all kinds of new abilities and stuff, and so there are like walls and doors that you can, you know, bust down that, you know, you might end up going, you know, like you want to go back and like look for stuff. Additionally, without a good sense of where you have been, it is very difficult to know at any given moment that you are not kind of like going around in circles, especially with like the way that the world is put together with like a hub world kind of with different kind of like areas that you can go into. And when you exit a level in a different place, you'll be at a different place in the hub world. So like I spent way more time than I would have wanted, you know, lost in this game. Like it really did like lead to a good amount of frustration, which is a problem because like when I got to screens where I was expected to solve a puzzle or deal with combat or, you know, anything that the game was like really good at doing, like it hummed. It was just like, you know, as the game world got bigger, it became a little bit harder to, you know, to find where you needed to go.
Well, and you're doing less and less of the things the game is good at. You're doing more and more trying to get to those things.
Right, right. You know, and I can understand a little bit, like this is a game that really does not have an awful lot of interface to it. There's no dialogue. There's no, there's really just like a minimum health bar that you have like available to you. And it makes sense because you're not Samus. You're not like a bounty hunter with a crazy computerized suit that can, you know, you can look at a map. You're a monster. You would have no reason to have that information. And well, that's kind of the tack that they were going with. Yeah.
Except that your hive mind that is literally leaving bits of yourselves in everywhere you've been. So innately you should have that information.
Yeah, you should know where the rest of you is. I agree.
Where am I?
There's a
literal question. Where am I?
I am everywhere. Yeah. So like you get an ability to do like a roar, which, you know, on one hand, it lets you play with your food a little bit. Like you can freak, you know, freak people out. Scientists, like you only really want to do that with the unarmed scientists or the ones who only have pistols. The ones with machine guns or flamethrowers will ruin your day. But when you roar, it also does like an echolocation kind of thing, where it'll like point out where the nearest save point is, and also like where the most, the closest devourable corpses are, which is strange. So like that's what they have. That's what they give you for, navigation, and it's not enough.
So can you like drop a corpse on an area you want to remember, and then like use the roar to find it again?
I don't think you can carry a corpse from screen to screen.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't really solve your problem. I just like the idea of it.
Yeah. But like the puzzles get nice and complicated, but not too complicated. The combat, you know, like you end up fighting against drones where it's really useful to shed a bunch of your body mass so you can shoot webs at them. There's like all kinds of like fun little considerations there, including one ability, which is called parasitism, where if you can catch somebody unaware with your little, little tentacle, you can hook into them and control them.
You can sing it.
Yeah. I mean, so not exactly, because they like you're still controlling it kind of like a puppet, like the
fair enough.
But like people, if they do not see the person get infested, they will not react like they're, you know, any different until you start opening fire on them. But like they work this in as a way to like, you know, you might have to grab control of somebody and get them to manipulate some machinery for you, in order to open pathways and stuff. Or you can manipulate a soldier and use their weapons to clear out a room, so you are never actually in any danger of being shot. You just have your puppet do the work for you.
I'm nice. Just imagining that this isn't some sort of mind control thing. There's just literally tentacles coming down and like marionetting the person, and for some reason no one notices.
I mean, it's not that different than what you're describing. Like it literally is just a tentacle that sticks out of the back of their head and leads all the way back around to you that nobody really notices unless they see it go in.
Did you change your hair?
Yeah. Have you always had a bloody tentacle that led to that vent? Yeah. So, you know, like that's a pretty big gripe that I have with it, the lack of a map. And you know, I don't know how to tell somebody how to get over that, because it definitely bugged me, but I found that like the individual encounters and stuff were enough to kind of like pull me through.
bumps it down to a buy on sale kind of recommendation.
Yeah, probably.
Nice.
Yeah. Any other questions about Carrion?
Did they have any version of like a final boss or like big final puzzle to get through, or like how does the game, what kind of note does the game go out on?
It ends on kind of like a tougher than usual area, both for puzzles and for combat. Like there are more drones and stuff, but there's not like a big final boss, like, a thing that is just kind of like waiting for you. If it weren't for a couple of other things about the way that it ends, I would say that it ends kind of on an anticlimax. The way it ends mm-hmm. now, though, I feel is very appropriate, and is suitably creepy.
I'm going to assume
final boss.
Yeah. I'm going to assume that it pulls a reverse inside.
What do you mean by a reverse inside?
The game inside. So the way that one ends, left. What's that?
You walk left at the end.
Literally walk left as a cute little boy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not going to ruin this game. It's relatively new for a lot of people.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The only other thing that I've been playing, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about this, but I'm just going to put a pin in it here. I've been streaming The Sinking City, which is a horror game, a horror like detective Lovecraftian, like explicitly Lovecraftian kind of game. Came out last year, I believe, in 2019. Or maybe it was before that. I don't know, guys. It's made by the same team that has made all of the Sherlock Holmes games. Even including like Sherlock Holmes The Awakened, where Sherlock and Watson go up against a Cthulhu cult.
As you do.
Yeah. This is their own IP. It's remarkable. I understand why some people might not be crazy about it, specifically because of the combat and stuff, but what they have managed to do with an open world in this, and kind of keeping the investigation feeling like open and prone to mistakes, is really, really cool. And I will have more to say about it as I kind of, get more done. I'm still relatively early on.
So just a quick clarifier, you don't have to go into depth, but prone to mistakes as in unreliable narrator, or prone to mistakes as in like literally there's people that are going to screw things up about the crime scene.
It's a little bit like, so it's kind of a more nuanced version of what can happen in LA Noir, where you can mm-hmm. botch an interrogation and accuse the wrong person of something, and like the game still goes on. Like you can fail a case, but it's like, oh, you did bad cop work and the wrong, and the person who did it got away. In this, as you're going around, you are collecting evidence that you can kind of assemble together. Like you can pair off, different pieces of evidence to form conclusions. However, a lot of the time what you pair with them, or like what conclusion you draw from them, like you're given a choice, you can come to the wrong conclusion based on what you see, or based on, like if you didn't find every single piece that was available to you, and the game still goes on, even if you come to the wrong conclusion about it.
So it's basically an accurate depiction of what would happen if you tried to use Sherlock Holmes logic.
Yeah, I'd say that. it's also it's depicting hideous things. You were in this gigantic flooded dreary city that is covered in dead sea creature things, but like it's a very pretty game, if that makes any sense.
So mm-hmm. the one kind of review I saw of this sort of called out that one of the problems with the game is the fact that apparently like the Lovecraftian bits are pretty overt. There's like deep ones walking around and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just no one seems to really care that much.
Yeah. I think that really lends itself to the kind of uncanniness of it. The fact that, it's not full on deep ones, but it's refugees from Innsmouth after the FBI or the federal, whatever they were rolling with, after the government raided Innsmouth and basically tore everything down, the survivors had to go somewhere, and a lot of them ended up being refugees here on this town. So like there are people who are in various stages of the Innsmouth look going around, and like they are treated as, you know, a minority, like that they are treated as, you know, something that does not belong there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, not just a minority, but a Lovecraft minority.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a choice. I want to see more of how they depict that before I think about it. But like, you know, one of the first people that you end up dealing with straight up looks like an ape man. You know, he's like a posh businessman kind of guy. And he talks about, oh yes, you know, we descend from this, you know, very healthy stock. You know, it turns out that like he is, you know, another one of these descendants of Arthur German, right? Mm-hmm. Just like that Lovecraft story where the guy finds out, you know, is descended from like literal apes through like rituals and stuff like that. So yeah,
back
like,
when we still didn't realize that, wait, that's all of us.
Well, yes, yeah. But yeah, I think that it, like I said, it lends to the uncanniness that a lot of that is just present there, and it's just the way that this broken town works. You know, it's a, you know, it's just a taken for granted as like this is what that society is here.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I'll have more to say about that later on. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so not a ton new. This week I was primarily playing Tabletop Simulator. Mm-hmm. So this was Gen Con Online. And, you know, yet another big con kind of put into a digital form. And it's been interesting. I wanted to start just by talking a little bit about that. Has anyone done a virtual con of any sort since this all has gone down?
No.
No, but I do have to ask if you invited Jen to Gen Con.
Jen was a saint during Gen Con. I owe her some huge favors for taking kids and all that stuff. But yeah, it's a really interesting, weird dynamic. And I've seen a lot of people crapping on digital cons, complaining that, you know, the feel isn't the same. We can't get the same amount of attention. Some people saying like, we didn't sell nearly as many games as we usually do at a con. And those people seem to consistently be like larger, more established publishers, where mm-hmm. the oeuvre I get, or the gist I get from kind of smaller creators or indie people like myself going in, has kind of been that it's worked really well for them.
Mm-hmm.
So like me, just like my experience was great. I showed off Deck of Wonders about as much as I could. Like I had a steady stream of people at every single demo time. You know, I don't think I could have fit many more people around the table. And it was just a blast every time. The connection and Tabletop Simulator format worked well. And then statistically, just looking at some different stuff I track, I was really happy. Like my Kickstarter sign up rate tripled mm-hmm. during the con and all that stuff. So it's interesting to see that this format is kind of not working or works less the bigger you are. And at least in my experience and what I've seen other people in my shoes talk about, it works more the smaller you are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really interesting world. And I don't think that's entirely a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly created some opportunities. So interesting stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it is working for growth for people who have not already hit like a certain kind of saturation point. It sounds like.
Yeah. And if you aren't planning on having, oh, go ahead.
And it's not working for if you need to move volume at scale.
Exactly. Yeah. People can't queue up in line for something the way they would physically.
Right.
They can't sell the new Settlers expansion that came out this year.
Exactly. But yeah, Tabletop Simulator has been its normal amount of janky. It is all at once like an amazing piece of software and a completely broken piece of software all at the same time. Probably my favorite moment was, you know, I'm in the middle of kind of explaining the rules right at the start. And suddenly the table just flips. And I jumped out of my seat. Like it got me. And everyone's laughing and everything. And the guy, one of the guys is like, he's like, sorry, I have a wireless mouse and I accidentally knocked it off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. At least it was a result of input and not just a thing that it decided to do.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that too. So yeah, so that was a funny moment. Another one, more on the tabletop simulator deciding to do a thing, is like I got 90% of the way through explaining something, and someone kind of timidly chimed in, and like, you know, you can't raise your hand. You can't, usually if you're looking around, you can see if someone has a question on their face or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't exist. And so I get to the end, you know, close to the end of my spiel, and someone's like, "So, are all the cards supposed to be white?"
Oh,
it's like, no, your artwork did not load.
Oh,
that's when you have to pivot to like, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's a artistic statement on the nature of creativity.
Well, that's, you know, this person working up the courage to the emperor has no clothes in here is pretty great. But yeah, so it was, I literally ran a demo every 2 hours from 9 to 9 every day of the con.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it was intense. And the great thing was, you know, you could just kind of collapse into bed afterwards. You didn't have to drive 40 minutes to a crappy hotel in the middle of nowhere. And so I think I was able to like do more with less fatigue than I would have at the normal Gen Con. So that's you know, like I said, worked out for me because I'm small. Doesn't sound like it's working out well for more established people. And again, that's not to draw a line of like that's good or bad. It's just the nature of how these cons work is shifting in the pandemic. So fun stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. In the middle of all of that, I got to play a few video games. Quick check in on Minecraft Dungeons, and I mentioned that earlier. Jen and I have gotten to the point where we're starting to be in the triple digits in terms of gear level. Oh, and wow. We are knocking on the door of beating the game on the hardest difficulty. And so it's getting to that point where like the screen is just a flood of enemies, and the game is much more focused on finding pieces of gear with broken combinations of enhancements you can put on them.
Yeah.
So what's really funny is I actually saw an article recently where one of the design leads or whatever was saying like, yes, we absolutely know there are completely broken combinations that come about, and we're cool with that.
Yeah.
Like that is awesome. Because every piece of equipment, it's randomized, and because every piece of equipment has a level that you're eventually going to get far enough beyond that it's no longer useful. You know, even the most broken thing is only broken for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that. I also appreciate that even as you get towards beating the game on the hardest difficulty, there is a difficulty slider within each broad difficulty. So I'm sure that makes absolutely no sense. It's like adventure, normal mode, adventure mode, and apocalypse mode or something like that. And then every single one of those has like normal 1 through 10, apocalypse 1 through 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so even once we get through the final level on, you know, apocalypse, whatever, we'll be able to go back and crank up the difficulty. And I imagine as they add content to the game and what have you, a very easy way for them to keep things interesting is just, hey, it literally now goes to 11, which will be fun. So, yeah, a lot of fun with that game. One really fun, like I said, broken combination that I was able to find. Some enhancements trigger on the end of a weapon combo. So, you know, you mash X and swing through a combo. And it'll release a shockwave or do a whirlwind of damage around you or whatever. But some weapons literally have a one-hit combo. I think it's the soul knife is like a one-hit combo, and it's just like a swing, and you swing back and forth, and every single one counts as a combo. And so at one point I had a soul knife with this shockwave on it that was so powerful, I didn't even need bows and arrows because the shockwave was essentially an arrow with every swing of the sword.
Oh, wow.
Of the knife. Yeah. And so that was just a blast or a shockwave, as it were. And then other things in terms of an arrow, like a bow and arrow, that starting out the base, it's a scatter crossbow. So the base version of it fires like 3 darts at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can get multi-shot on it, which will have a 40% chance of firing 5 darts. You then put, I forget what it's called, but it's like, impact or whatever, where it hits a target and then the target sprays a shower of 5 arrows out in all directions. And then you put ricochet on it. And so every arrow has a chance of bouncing before it hits its final destination.
Mm-hmm.
And literally a single pull of the trigger, you know, count that up, has the potential to put literally just fill the screen with arrows. And that is, it's just
like crash the game.
Yeah. So they're trying. That's where those Minecraft graphics come in handy.
Have you tried like my just ideal loadout? And this could just be because like I'm an idiot and like simple fun things, was just like the horn in every slot.
The one that blasts people away from you?
Yeah. It's basically a point blank AoE with like physics enabled, and just like getting near a cliff and like activating that and knocking all my enemies off the cliff.
Oh, that's, I mean, significant portions of the final level are on ramparts where you could just abuse that all day. So yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. No, my favorite kind of build that I look for is, I think I talked about it on a previous episode. There's a couple abilities that have to do with your artifacts triggering, and then an ability that has to do that triggers all your artifacts when you go below 25% health. And so you just basically make yourself unkillable because you get all these health, you get health back every time you use an artifact. The artifacts are automatically getting used like a bonus use whenever your health goes below a certain point. And that's a lot of fun as well. So yeah, it's like the long tail of fun, just finding broken things to play with in this game is really, really good.
Nice. It's very good to see a large studio like that just be fine that something is broken, or broken is probably the wrong way to put it, that they will abide interesting results that may not be perfectly balanced.
It's yeah, like the rough edges aren't sanded off.
Right.
It's like Ghost of Tsushima. Fun trumps like correctness.
Yes.
Warframe kind of has an interesting approach to this in that it does this, but then also they just kind of adopted a policy of like each new content update, we're going to increase the levels of the enemies and figure that you guys will figure it out.
Yeah, balance difficult and trust the ingenuity of gamers.
Yeah.
So that's Minecraft Dungeons. I talked about Diabolical a while ago. It's an AFPS or a spiritual successor to all the AFPS games of your Quakes and what have you.
Okay.
And they are back around to stress testing and kind of they've opened back up their beta after being gone for a long time. It's a small team. And I haven't gotten to play much of it, but what I did play feels really good. My biggest complaint last time I talked about it was that the rockets fell off, and like you'd feel like it was just, you know, the game was constantly surprised at the actions you were taking and a step behind you. They've ironed that out. It felt much better, and they made one small change, which I think is going to have a huge impact. Diabolical just has like a dash button that in your Quakes and everything, where you could kind of get up momentum by jumping while you were running and then do all these kind of momentum and jumping maneuverability stuff. Diabolical just has a button to start you moving that fast in the direction, which is great. But you know, the last time I played, it was also kind of annoying that every time it felt like you got the drop on someone, they would just use that as an escape button. So they've now changed it so that whenever you take damage, that button goes on an automatic 2-second cooldown. And that just makes things feel so much better. Like it's no longer a get out of jail free card to immediately get away or change direction and kind of dodge if you are ambushed. You have to play a little more carefully now and know that you're not able to just disappear at the drop of a hat. So I like that balance change a lot and look forward to playing more of the game.
So I can't remember the last time that you talked about this, Dennis. So for forgive me. It's a PC game, this Diabolical?
Yeah, PC game. It is a spiritual successor to all of the arena first person shooters that were popular a long time ago. Just kind of putting a new coat of paint on them and bringing the matchmaking and all that stuff into the modern age while staying very true to the you know, very competitive scene that's developed around that.
Yeah. I'm really happy that there is like active nostalgia. So, okay. There's both active nostalgia for that era of games, that era of shooter, and also like talented developers who are making them, because like, you know, Dusk is a really fun game that is also in that vein. It's not that's not multiplayer, but you know.
So I think a lot of people in the Diabolical community are like, this is going to bring back AFPS and this is going to be the resurgence. And I don't know if that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But it is nice not to have to go to like a Quake Live server from millennia ago to get this kind of experience.
Nice. Awesome. Did you have anything else besides Minecraft Dungeons, Diabolical, Tabletop Simulator?
That is me.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
A quirk of story in games is that it's very easy to miss story in games, whether that be skipping cutscenes or just not going to the right area or talking to the right person. It's really easy to have cool ideas and interesting lore bits just out of your reach because they weren't on the critical path. So I asked people, what is your favorite detail or side story from a game that is very easy to miss?
Yeah. And I will start us off here with Ollie, who says, in Dishonored, Pendleton asks you to deliver a letter to Lord Shaw. You can choose not to, but if you do, you end up in a rather entertaining duel. It's also the first sign your new buddies might just be dicks after all. And I'll throw in the bonus of collecting the letters in The Last of Us. You don't have to do it, but it adds a ton of pathos to the game, especially after the underground sewers section. Yeah, the underground sewers is a bummer.
Yeah. The one in Pittsburgh, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any part of these games that isn't a bummer?
When Ellie's making fun of the one guy's porn, that's pretty fun. Yeah.
I was going to go with the giraffes.
The giraffes are good, yes. Yeah.
Oh, do you get to shoot the giraffes or something?
No,
or?
you pet the giraffes. Yeah, why would you shoot?
Are there any dogs you can pet in The Last of Us? I need to check the Twitter account on that.
You can pet them with arrows in the second one.
Yeah, well, what's your definition of pet?
That's the widest possible definition does accommodate that, but I don't know if I want to go there.
David, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says the Hildebrand missions in Final Fantasy Civ
14.
14.
I like David's game better.
They are weird side stories that are both funny and have throwback fights with both Gilgamesh and Altros.
Yeah, famous joke boss fights from earlier in the series.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says...
Oh. Go ahead, sir.
Callum says the Hypogean Gaol in Bloodborne. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Hypogean Jail.
Hypogean Jail in Bloodborne. There are other people who I talked to about that while playing that never died to the bagmen and so never saw this area. Led to some interesting conversations. And normally to those people replaying specifically to go here. Mm-hmm. On the same note, I would have missed Kanehurst if it were not for Bonfireside Trap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bloodborne has really good hidden content. You can also throw in the Upper Cathedral Ward, where you can see what's really going on with the Healing Church in the game.
Was that missable?
Yes. Yeah. You don't have to go there.
Like the entirety of the expansion.
What's that?
Isn't that the or no? No, that's
It's related but different.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I did miss Kanehurst.
Okay, that's a shame because Kanehurst is it's probably one of the best areas in that game, depending on the day.
I missed Kanehurst the first time through.
Gotcha.
Let's say okay. Yeah.
Oof.
I missed Kanehurst as well.
It's kind of a tonally weird area of the game. Like, it's very much more Dark Souls than Bloodborne.
Yeah, yeah. You're dipping into a Castlevania game and it's fun. Yeah. Dennis, what does David say?
David says, in Witcher 3, out in some far-flung part of the very large map near some cliffs, there's a building that looks somewhat similar to the Sky Prison in Game of Thrones. In the corner of one of the cells, there's a body of a little person. I did check to see if this is the preferred term, but if I'm incorrect, do please call me out on it. Nope, you're good. With a small bag of coins. Furthermore, outside the cell, there's a rather large body with a club and some leather scraps on it.
Oh.
Well played.
That's cool. I did not know about that Easter egg. I like that. And I do believe that little person is the preferred nomenclature at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The last that I checked, anyway. Ooh boy, Facebook just decides they're going to refresh the page no matter what, huh? Yeah, that's not
you
irritating.
Can't tell them what to do.
I wish
last
you could.
Draw Facebook.
Let's see here. Greg writes, there are several Star Trek games that reference very obscure and specific details or bits of info from like 1 minute of one episode in one of the series that only a geek or diehard Trekker like myself would recognize it. And I do every time. What have I done with my life? I don't know. Seems like you like things and do things. And sometimes in the things you do, aspects of things that you like show up.
Man, I really want to play the Star Trek MMO, but I feel like it's been too long now. There are probably however many expansions in or whatever.
It's probably free to play at this point, though, so there's not an awful lot of barrier to entry.
True.
Yeah. Let's see, David. What does David say?
David says, I love when a game gives you the chance to explore an NPC backstory. I never really liked Jacob in Mass Effect 2 until I played his loyalty mission, in which his supposedly long-dead father turned out to be alive, but went full Heart of Darkness.
It's funny, I completely forgot Jacob, but I remember that quest. He said, Jacob, who's Jacob? Oh, right, that one, okay, yeah. That quest.
You know what they say, you don't remember what people do, you remember how they made you feel or how their fathers went full Heart of Darkness on you.
Yeah. Oh man. Let's see, Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, solving the case of some old lady's missing frying pan from The Witcher 3. There's no quest too low for Geralt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, but what is the like depressing twist? Because with The Witcher 3, someone ends up dead.
Barters for half of her house.
It kind of so that one doesn't necessarily have too much of a twist. I think that ends up being like an out of the way tutorial for one of your runes or your signs that you can do to like break in. But yeah, I could be wrong about that too. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff in that opening area in White Orchard that ends up being, you know, if you're just following the critical path, you are going to miss that, which is a shame because like White Orchard, you know, it's one of the places where you can see kind of the leading edge of this conflict that is tearing up the entire kingdom. Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, basically the entire story of Dark Souls, hear, hear. If you don't take the time to read the item descriptions and put things together, you'll miss basically all of it and still have a great time. You'll save Gwyn from his decrepit fate without really knowing why.
Yeah. And only have a vague sense that things are sad and out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lucas writes, Dawn of War 2, Chaos Rising, has a mechanic in which your squad can be exposed to the pull of chaos. I assume that is capitalized for Warhammer reasons. Certain missions, equipment, and bonus objectives will increase or decrease their corruption, which builds toward a climax in which one of your squad is revealed to be a traitor. The game chooses whichever squad mate has the highest corruption as the traitor. Unfortunately, it's extremely easy not to have anyone meet the required corruption level, which results in the game ass-pulling an NPC as the secret traitor, causing the twist to fall flat. This is unfortunate because the canonical traitor is your heavy weapons marine, who has an actually extremely good rationale for betraying the Imperium and gives a great monologue. It's so easy to miss, though, and requires you to essentially build intentionally toward that result. Yeah, that reminds me of, oh geez, Dragon's Dogma, where like in the end game, like there is a romantic interest who is kidnapped, but who the person who is kidnapped is kind of determined basically by who has the highest loyalty to you, which ends up being most of the time the person that you talk to the most. So a non-trivial amount of the time. Pawn? What's that?
Switch your pawn?
No, because I think
sorry, you're choking.
No, so like there is a you know non-trivial chance that you will end up in the end game rescuing the blacksmith who is chosen as your as your love interest, which you know that's cool. Let's see.
I love the idea in Dawn of War of like a Build-A-Benedict.
Good.
I was just going to say, just like Warhammer lore is so much fun.
Yeah, I'd like to get a just to find a good like summary or entry point into that, because again, it seems like a place that is full of good ideas. Like, I'd like to see what chaos is in that. That seems, you know, like it would be fun. Mm-hmm. Let's see, David. What does David say? That's twice this time.
Yeah, there are too many Davids now, by which I mean just enough Davids. David says, skipping side quests or optional objectives in Yakuza game robs you of the real heart and character of the games. Some of the sub-stories have stayed with me longer than any main story plot points have. One example from Yakuza Kiwami 2, after a fight, some Yakuza bosses invite you to their club, which you soon find out is a diaper fetish club. I never forget the image of the main character squaring off to fight 10 Yakuza goons in diapers in a giant playroom.
That's really funny.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And Yakuza has a really good reputation for having that kind of Saints Row 3-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Story.
Yeah. David, I know we had a whole thing about pronouncing Japanese words earlier. You said Yakuza Kawaii, which is actually a word. You know, like I understand why you said that, but like like a cute, like the cute Yakuza spinoff. That would be very funny to me, actually. Just, you know, like to Yakuza chibi kind of stuff.
I was going to say, I would be very surprised if there wasn't a section of a Yakuza game that had that spin.
let's see.
All I remember from Yakuza is spending at least an hour trying to learn how to play pachinko and mm-hmm. not learning how to play pachinko.
I think you just learn how to play pachinko.
Yeah.
And just
let it roll. Yeah. Ben, what does Elliot say?
Elliot says, the phone call you can make in Disco Elysium, it tells us so much about Harry's past with so little words, an exchange I think a lot of us could relate to in our darker moments. Yeah. I had repressed that memory.
Yeah, it's fucking brutal.
I need to play this game.
It's not as brutal as what happens at the, you know, at the end of the game. But even that's missable. You can, oh man, wow. Yeah, sorry. Huh. That might replace my answer. Possibly. I'll just say it here, that there is a very meaningful dream sequence that you can get at the end. At the end of the game, everybody, when just like out of nowhere, somebody says, hey, go at you want to make sure, you know, you might want to take a nap on that cot there. You want to take a nap on that cot, because one of the most emotionally gutting scenes in video games happens in that, and it's not mandatory.
Yeah.
God, that is such a fucking good game.
It's a weird one.
Yeah.
Not a lot of games like that one.
No, not at all. Let's see. Dennis, what does Casey say?
Casey says, okay, this one's pretty silly, but that's probably why it's stuck in my brain. In the beginning of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, there is a mandatory quest, which as part of it has you steal the obsidian eye from a one-eyed man and shove it up a goat's butt?
Mm-hmm.
The story moves on from there, but if you come back to that area later and start hunting goats, you can eventually find one that had the eye and unlock the achievement Stink Eye. What?
Ew, gross. I don't care for that one bit.
Oh, no.
I want to know if they animated the eye, like, next to the corpse, you know, after you kill it.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just implied.
And finally here, John writes, this is the second time I've mentioned Prey 2017 for one of these, but it's hard to beat that tabletop game that Abigail Foy and her coworkers play, especially as it ties into her relationship with Danielle Cho and their story in a very touching way. Fun fact, the game takes place in the world of Arx Fatalis, another Arkane Studios title.
Huh.
I didn't notice that connection. Yeah.
And yeah. Then I posted one from the Slack, FYI.
Oh, cool. Let me see here. Oh,
but
boy.
Continue your thought.
Yeah. Prey and Tacoma were both games that came out in 2017, I believe. Mm-hmm. And both of them had meaningful character sheets, like tabletop game character sheets, and both of them took place on space stations. Yeah.
Huh. It was in vogue.
Let's see here. I'll finish the last one so nobody else has to rewind. Phil writes, probably the moment in Morrowind where you see a person fall from the sky. Turns out he was experimenting with a scroll with a scroll of Icarian flight, which adds 1,000 points to your acrobatics ability. For 7 seconds, you can jump across the entire map, but won't survive the landing without assistance. Yep.
Morrowind has some of the best cursed items of any game.
The Boots of Blinding Speed.
Yeah, I was about to say, I still love that item and I'm disappointed. I don't think I could ever say another Elder Scrolls game is better than Morrowind unless it has the Boots of Blinding Speed.
Yeah, Morrowind is special. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird though. I never thought about this, but the fact that it has the scroll of Icarian flight implies that in the world of EverQuest, in the world of Elder Scrolls, they have the myth of Icarus, mm-hmm. which is
it's
weird.
Like Han Solo saying, "I'll see you in hell."
Ooh, yeah, huh. We can do ours real quick. For me, this is more of just an important detail that you probably feel but do not notice, you know, that you might not notice in Call of Cthulhu Dark Corners of the Earth, in the opening of the game, which is definitely the strongest point of the game, where you're walking around town and everything is just really off-putting and everything is hostile. One of the reasons you may feel that way is the fact that there are people everywhere watching you from rooftops. You know, like when you turn and look, they duck down or they get out of the way or they move out of the windows and stuff. But yeah, people are watching you that entire time and it is not obvious. And, you know, it's hard to imagine you playing that game without knowing the story that it's based on, you know, that things are going to mm-hmm. go bad. But, you know, it is definitely a nice subtle foreshadowing of exactly how hostile this place is.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to program that or kind of build that. Like, how many places can I stick a person?
Yeah, before it gets obvious. Yeah. David, how about you?
I think this is kind of not actually a good one, but one that's very entertaining is the most recent Ghost Recon game. Okay. It's open world, and they take that to the extreme of... you know, there's a guy that's basically gone full Heart of Darkness and, you know, he's holed up in a base. And if you want to, you can just go directly to that base and like kill him.
Cool.
Which is kind of the final objective of the game. However, if you do that, the cutscene still assumes you've played the rest of the game. So, for example, your main character yells at him, "You made me kill my best friend," which hasn't happened.
So they didn't necessarily plan for you to do it, but it's actually something you can do.
The weird thing is, like, I don't know how they could have not planned for you to do it because, like, it's just straight up, like, you know, it's not some sort of like sequence break thing. It's just straight up like it's there and you can just walk in and do it. So like they had to realize that that was an option. I have no idea why they didn't account for it at all.
It sounds like a crappy thing, but right. Yeah, I was gonna say, it sounds like a decision that was made at the start of development that they forgot to tie up that loose end at the end when they were cramming.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is my favorite part of that game, other than tactical walking.
Ben, how about you?
A lot of people miss this, but in Far Cry 4, if you don't follow the bad guy's directions and you leave the room, there's an entire game that they programmed in that you can play. Normally, people just wait there for 10 minutes and beat the game quickly, but...
Yeah, the speedrun strat.
Yeah. Yeah, you got mine. That's pretty good. delivered more creatively than I would have. So I'll leave it at what you said.
Very cool. Thank you everybody for writing in the future. So we're changing the day that we're recording to Tuesday. Are we changing the day we're posting? I imagine we are, right?
That's up to you, my friend.
Yeah.
You won't hurt my feelings if you do.
Happening is we're not going to change the day and then we're going to forget until Tuesday,
right? So let's say if you would like to participate in these, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Just follow the page and you'll get notifications, but those likely are going to start going up on Tuesday afternoons unless you know we decide to keep it the same on Monday. Be flexible with us and understand, please. Also, thank you for
if it goes up on Monday, you'll have an extra day. Yes. So it'll end. It will always end on Tuesday, and then we'll figure out how early we can get it up.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you, Dennis, for putting that up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I'll get us started here. This was announced last week, but it still bears mentioning. FromSoft actually came out, I believe, as part of an Activision event of some kind, and announced that they're going to be releasing a substantial patch to Sekiro coming out this October. The biggest thing that they're going to be doing...
Are Shadows going to die three times now?
I mean, by the end of Sekiro, Shadows can die far.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that they're going to be adding is the ability to do like a boss rush mode after you beat the game. Additionally, you're going to be able to re-challenge bosses that you had fought before, given that, you know, people who really enjoy Sekiro enjoy it mostly for the boss fights, the ability to go back to, you know, a really good boss fight that you enjoyed, like Genichiro on the rooftop or whatever, is a pretty cool thing. So that is in addition to, I believe, some new gear that they are adding in. There is something, I believe, additional difficulty setting. And the ability to basically just kind of approximate the like messages, like the message system from the Souls games, where you can leave little remnants that people can activate and see your character animated and doing stuff. So it's pretty big, and it's kind of crazy that this big of a patch is coming out, you know, like 18 months after the game initially released.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. So I don't know that it's going to make me play Sekiro again any sooner than I otherwise would have. The game didn't necessarily land as well for me as it did for a lot of people, but this all seems like, you know, good. This all seems like good decisions on their part.
Yeah. I like this revisit a boss idea. Like this type of game compresses so much that a lot of times, you know, on subsequent playthroughs, that's the big exciting thing that you're going through or going for sure.
Yeah. Or, you know, just like if you are playing the game and you just barely beat a boss, you know, just by the skin of your teeth, you know, you might not be in that good of a position to go and attack the next thing, you know, as you would be if you got confident with that boss. So just the idea that you can go back and really get one of them down without playing the whole game over again is good and neat.
I don't know if there's any kind of XP or grinding, but I love the idea of grinding rather than going out and killing 1,000 small enemies. Just kill another boss once.
I have no idea if you get if you get experience for doing this. No clue.
That's a good point.
Dennis, what's going on with the PlayStation 5?
Yeah, they've come out and said a bit more about what PlayStation 4 accessories will work with the PlayStation 5. And the biggest one is not surprising, and not the worst news, but not what I was hoping for. The DualShock 4 is going to work with supported PS4 games on the PS5, but not with new PS5 games.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got BS language around why that is, et cetera, when 90% of games will, you know, right. they'll have everything they need. So fine. Yes. Try to sell more controllers. I get it. But otherwise it's actually pretty generous. We've already known VR is going to be supported. And you could kind of intuit that all the PlayStation Move stuff is supported as well because of that, but they've come out and confirmed that.
Good.
Probably the biggest piece for me is that the PlayStation Eye camera is going to stay supported for VR.
It would have to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they are going to send, they haven't given more details on this, but they're going to send some kind of connector update to people that own PSVR as a part of it. So it's weird. Like the PSVR camera connector cable is some arcane format that I've never seen anywhere else. I've wanted to get an extension for mine forever and have never been able to find one that does it. And so this actually for me is a bright spot because I assume they're porting it over to like a USB or an HDMI or something like that.
Yeah.
And that will hopefully allow me to then actually mount the camera where it will track much better than it does right now.
Yeah.
So that's that. Weirdly, that is the most exciting thing in this update is the fact that they're going to have to send an adapter.
Yeah. I have no idea. Like, are they going to require a proof of purchase? Because I guarantee you, I do not have the, I don't have the UPC code off of mine still.
It's weird. They look at your catalog and see if you own enough VR games to justify it.
Maybe, possibly. they see if you've played any on your on your profile.
God, yeah. I wonder what data they're tracking. They probably see if you've plugged one in, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not a ton there. You know, all the other stuff, flight sticks and racing wheels and headsets are all supported. So that's nice.
Yeah.
And most of it is just nuances on the VR side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is coming out pretty much the same time that Microsoft has announced that Xbox, I think it's Xbox 360 and Xbox One controllers will work on the Xbox Series X or whatever.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to work with Xbox Series X games or if they're going to be doing something like Sony did. So
there will be 1,000 kind of black market converters out there. There were for PS3 to PS4. So
yeah. Let's see, David, is Flight Simulator interesting?
Yeah, so this is basically just a, you know, patented cool, you know, thing exists thing, but Flight Simulator is out and apparently pulls in all of the data that Bing has been gathering over the years. To present a accurate model of the entire planet for you to fly around in, which it's pretty spectacular that you can do all that just from porn searches. No, but joking aside, it actually sounds pretty cool. Apparently, they use like satellite data to, actually get like the basic, you know, layout of everything, you know, how everything looks and interpret that to determine, you know, what's trees, what's roads, that sort of thing. And then are adding in like high accuracy models of like specific landmarks and things like that.
So guys, I this is probably the right time to break it to you. But I wanted to let you know that we are all in a simulation of Microsoft Flight Simulator 2050. So take that as you will. Take some time to consider, but that is actually our world and life as you know it is a part of a flight sim like this just a little bit in the future.
Yeah, it's just much more dorky The Matrix.
Yeah.
They wanted like a really authentic dystopia where they like have a functional society before it and then watch it. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait.
Just modeling a collapse. Yeah. You know, the nice part is if we are in a simulation, you know, if what you say is true, Dennis, then my life does not change at all. I don't care. Like, what's that change about any of the decisions I'm going to make? Yeah. This looks really cool. There are like websites. I don't know if it's like Microsoft doing a paid push to get this featured, but like there are several like write-ups and like videos that I've seen that make me think maybe it would be worth getting a flight stick and like messing around in flight simulator. And then I shake my head and think, wait a minute, no, it wouldn't be worth doing that.
Yeah, it seems like learning how to fly planes a useful life skill.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I would want to get a flight stick for the Star Wars dogfighting game that's coming out, but
oh yes.
Yeah. And Ben, you had a rider story on this one. You're throwing in what else is going on with Microsoft Flight Simulator.
They also announced that they're going to have VR support for the game eventually. Cause I think previously we'd probably talked about this a while ago where we were saying the opposite, where they weren't going to do VR support is what they announced like early in the year. But I think it was kind of like everybody wanted it, so they set aside a team to work on it. Initially, it's only going to work with a device that's in the works right now, and so that's why it'll be supported in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's the first device that's going to work for it is HP Reverb G2, whatever that is.
Okay.
It's like a new headset.
PC-ass name.
Yeah, it's a new headset. I don't know. Specs seem to say that it's better, but I have no idea how true any of that stuff is. And then after that, they're going to try and add support for other existing devices like HTC, Oculus, and Valve. But that's sweet. Hopefully, I think that's more of a selling point to the game than anything else for me. Is I think that would make it really worthwhile if you could play it in VR.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So that is a bunch of stories. David, you shared a screenshot of what appears to be a joke tweet about determining if a number is even or odd in a programming language. Is that related to anything, or is that just a fun joke you're sharing with the classroom?
Yeah, that was just me sharing with the classroom.
Gotcha. Okay. Huh. Wouldn't you just be able to do a modulus operator and then see if there's a one to see if there's a remainder? And then
congratulations, Cole, you're better than half the programmers out there.
Cool. All right.
Pass the interview.
Okay. I'm terrible at programming, but I'll take that as a win. How do y'all feel?
You can probably get a job.
What's that?
You can do a FizzBuzz. You can probably get a job.
That was. Have you heard of FizzBuzz before?
No.
It's like you count to 15. Every time you say 3, you say Fizz. Every time you say or divisible by 5, you say Buzz. Uh-huh. I guess if it's divisible by 15, is when you say FizzBuzz. Okay. And then you just do a bunch of you count to like 100 or something like that.
Gotcha. But
finding out that was an interview question for programmers was one of like the first wake up calls where I'm like, oh wow, you don't need to be that good to like program.
Basically that it's almost impossible to accurately assess programming in a interview, but a significant portion of supposed programmers, they say about 25% can't program at all.
Oh.
So you give them that test, 25%, and then just like have to guess on the rest.
Huh.
That's awesome.
Okay. I had no idea that I was actually solving a known problem there. Yeah. Anyway, how do you all feel about buttoning it up instead of talking more about programming?
Buttons.
I feel 50-50.
Thank you everybody for tuning in to this week's episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. Dennis, is there anything going on with Deck of Wonders that you want to promote?
Not especially. I think there will be a tryable version up publicly on Tabletop Simulator either this week or next week. Mm-hmm. So look out for that. And then the Kickstarter launch date is August 25th.
Fantastic. So go there and sign up for notifications for when that goes live.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. bit.ly/DOW Kickstarter.
Cool. And you know, the stuff for the show, you can leave ratings or reviews in Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe to the Patreon. You can tell your friends, but most of all, we want you to come back next week. If you can, we'd appreciate it. Am I forgetting anything?
Keep bobbing and weaving out there.
Oh yeah. You didn't say bobbing and weaving earlier today. So anyway, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me wandering around Toshima.
And I've been Ben Merkel. I'm Merkelby on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. That's really embarrassing if I was able to solve that programming problem.
Yeah.
All right. Who has titles?
Got quite a few here.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Dennis.
I've got Any Two Words Plus Mario. and then I've got, you have to tell me the right way to style it, but Oblaspherophobia.
Oblaspherophobia.
Yeah, I'll drop it into the chat just to save you.
Yeah.
Or you could style. Oh, that's wellness actually. That is the wrong channel.
Oblaspherophobia and wellness.
Yeah, we both right, style, hey. Yeah, we both stylized it the same way. Okay.
Or nice.
Spelled it the same way rather. Yep. Okay.
I've got min-max the haiku. I've got 4D wall stair chess.
Okay.
I also have 4D wall stair, wall stair chess.
Okay.
Yeah, STARE. And then I just wrote down wandering around Toshima.
Okay. All right. David, what else did you have?
So I kind of two variations on the same joke. I had either get a hat for your frog, or it's worth it because it's a really nice hat.
I'm just going to put it's a really nice hat.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ben, what'd you have?
I had nothing.
Okay. I had nothing too.
So it sounds like nothing has the most votes.
Yeah. Go for plurality.
So I like Oblaspherophobia.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah. Nice. How do you guys feel? Is everybody good for oblaspherophobia?
Except for people with oblaspherophobia, I guess. But...
We're raising awareness, Ben.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go play with my cat and then go to bed.
Yeah. Good hanging out, guys.
Yeah. Take care, everybody. Be safe,
guys. Have a good week.
Yep.